We are live.
Leo Finance Weekly One Zoom Show, aka AMA. I'd not say MMA. AMA. Although maybe your questions will have some fighting words. A riled up audience. The lions and lionesses. What do we got? November 22nd, a couple days before Thanksgiving here in the United States. What Poly Cubs and Cubs are you thankful for?
I think you got to unmute in Discord.
I always forget that.
Yeah. Me too.
I got to jump on the YouTube this week too. Apparently people were chatting in YouTube last week, but.
Oh, really?
I never went over there.
It's all right. They made their way. Discord bot.
They made their way over to Discord.
Yeah, we got to get that Discord bot that automatically takes their comments and reposts them.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I got some BUSD. I guess I could plow that into the BUSD Cub pool.
Yeah, we were just talking in the, for the audience. We're just talking in the pre-show about the new Cub Kingdom. And about some of the updates that are coming to Cub and why we're excited about it.
So just to be clear, as far as the farms that contribute to burn fees, that is basically anything that is Hive, HBD, any of those farms, right? Is it just those, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, but really, and this is something I've been trying to get into the weeds with a little bit more, is figuring out which pools have the most productive capital, because I think it always kind of changes depending on the liquidity. And what I mean by that is basically when trading volume happens, arbitrage is available. And that is what ultimately leads to wrapping fees across the Beehive BHBD bridge. So technically on the surface level, you would look at it and you would say, well, anything with Beehive or BHBD, which is four of the pools, right? One, two, three, four. Yeah, four of the pools. So four out of six of the Cub pools are Beehive and BHBD. You would think that adding liquidity strictly to those pools is what would lead to burn fees. But that's not actually completely the case. I would say on the surface level, yes. But then you also have to keep in mind that typically when people are trading, they're trading in and out of like BUSD and BNB. So we actually still do need good liquidity in BUSD-Cub and BNB-Cub. Because ultimately when you trade, like let's say that someone comes in, they want to trade BHBD for BUSD, and they use something like Paraswap as a DEX aggregator, it will actually swap part of the trade through the BHBD BUSD pool. And it'll also do BHBD to Cub and from Cub to BUSD. And that second part of the swap actually creates a lot more trading volume because now you're swapping through two of the Cub pools rather than just one.
Gotcha.
So basically it's kind of like a nuanced question, but I'd say if you just want to go for strict, you know, surface level, then yeah, just jump into like a BHBD Beehive pool. But yeah, I do think that the BUSD Cub and the BNB Cub actually do have a lot of value too, by kind of being that on-ramp, off-ramp. And I've been trying to look at Thorchain as a good example of this. They've got every pool paired to Rune. And what that does is every time there's any trade, so if there's like a trade from Ethereum to Bitcoin, it goes Ethereum, Rune, Bitcoin, and then you get your Bitcoin, right? So it's always swapping through Rune on the back end, which is always imbalancing the pools, which ultimately creates arbitrage volume. So that trading volume is just constantly feeding itself. And that's what I've really tried to do with Cub. So now we just kind of need more liquidity just to make that more, kind of feed that cycle more heavily in terms of like dollar trading volume. But you do see it happen. Like anytime there's any move on like Hive in terms of the Hive price or even HBD, because HBD sometimes moves a few pennies, you'll see the trading volume actually flow through all of the Cub pools, and the Cub price will move, and then trading volume will increase on all of the pools, and it's ultimately good for the bridge because it just kind of creates that back and forth trading volume. But yeah, we were just talking in the pre-show about how if so right now the multi-token bridge in the last report, it earned $8,000 in revenue. I think in the next report, it'll probably earn something closer to 9,000, maybe more. That's just like based on what I saw last time I looked at it. And so if we're, if say we're earning about $9,000 a month, the Cub DAO, and that's not all of that money is used to automatically buy back and burn Cub through that Cub DAO contract. And you can track it on the DAO address. So if we're at $9,000 a month right now, and the multi-token bridge liquidity is about $650,000 in multi-token bridge TVL. If we 10X that TVL to 6.5 million, then theoretically the revenue would be $90,000 a month. And it might actually even be more than that. I don't think it would be less. Because the trading volume and the arbitrage revenue is actually an exponential, because the more liquidity you have, the more arbitrage and kind of like what I was just talking about with the liquidity and the trading volume kind of feeds itself. That just grows exponentially as those pools get deeper because you can do bigger trades. So if bigger trades are allowed, then bigger arbitrage is allowed and bigger wrapping fees, are incurred. So, so we were just talking like if the liquidity were to 10X, from, you know, 650K to 6.5 million, and the Cub DAO was earning $90,000 a month, that would be, the DAO would literally be buying back 25% of the Cub market cap every single month. So obviously that is not a feasible thing for the DAO because there's not that much Cub out there to be bought. So if there is a good amount of Cub out there to be bought, but at 25% of the market cap, you can't just go out and buy 25% of the market cap without moving the Cub price up. So essentially, if we start getting that kind of liquidity, we were talking about how the APYs would drop. But actually, I think the APYs will always kind of return to equilibrium as those wrapping fees come in. It's pretty crazy to see how it's working just with this small amount of liquidity.
Yeah, especially if that liquidity is going into one of those four farms predominantly.
Yeah. Well, and those are the only options, right? Like if you're adding money to Cub, really your only options are one of those farms outside of like Bleo, BNB.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, what else? We got BUSD Cub, BNB Cub.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying. Even those pools, in my opinion, this is something I've been trying to track lately, which is kind of difficult to track, but I do know that it does have a positive impact. I'm just trying to gauge how positive it is. But having the BUSD Cub and the BNB Cub pools are very important as well, because they're the on-ramp, off-ramp. So when you have trading volume, say from BHBD to BUSD, it's actually routing some of that trading volume through the BUSD-Cub pool, which creates trading volume and arbitrage for the other pools, which ultimately creates more wrapping fees.
Indeed, I'm adding to BUSD Cub as we speak, because I happen to have $250 worth of BUSD just chilling in my wallet, and I got a whole lot of Cub to do things with.
I like it.
And the reason I have a whole lot of Cub to do something with is because I did not read the effing docs. So obviously the big news of the week is the new Cub Kingdom, which gives us more options than the prior Cub Kingdom, but not quite as diverse as I assumed because I didn't read the effing doc. So rule number one, read the effing doc. Rule number two.
That is rule number one.
Yeah, sometimes don't be in a rush to plow into things because you can kind of get a vibe for what's going on if you really just look around the room for a second. But so obviously always things going on each week in the Leo Finance universe, but the big milestone for this week was the launch of the new Cub Kingdom. So why don't you share that with us and break it all down?
Yeah, so we've been working on this for a while, the variable staking kingdom, and it is finally live. So this new kingdom replaces the old one. I know a lot of people are asking about that. So you'll notice if you go to cubdefi.com/kingdoms, you'll see that there is the old kingdom. It's second on the list now. There's still 74,000 in TVL, so some people haven't moved yet. And the APY says zero. So the rewards are there's no more rewards in that kingdom. So you gotta migrate to the new one. And then in the new one, there are two options for staking. There is fixed rate staking, or fixed term staking, and then flexible staking. So flexible staking is essentially the same thing as the old Cub Kingdom. And we were talking about this pre-show too. So both flexible and fixed pay auto compounding rewards. So whether you're in, it doesn't matter which one you're in, your rewards are auto compounding into your balance and you're getting the APY based on that. So I know the UI, if you're in the locked pool, the UI is a little bit confusing because it says recent Cub profit and then it says Cub locked, and the Cub locked number never moves up, but the recent Cub profit is always ticking up. So it kind of looks like you have two separate balances, but really you have one balance and it's the sum total of those two balances. So for example, let's say you have 100 Cub locked right now and your recent Cub profit says 2.2 Cub. That means that you now have 102.2 Cub earning the APY that you're earning in the pool. But the UI is going to show it separate. It's going to show what you originally deposited. That's your Cub locked. And it's going to show your recent Cub profit. That's the profit since you locked, as two separate numbers. And that's actually something that a lot of people requested from the old Cub Kingdom, because they said it was hard to realize or see or calculate how much that they actually earned when they staked in the kingdom, because it was auto compounding and it would only show your total balance in real time. So now what this does is simply separate what you deposited from what you've earned. But in reality, you are earning based on the total of those two values. So kind of a side note, but so my point was on, someone just plowed like 500,000 Cub into it while we were talking. There's 3.5 million Cub.
Oh, I know who that was.
Fixed.
I know exactly where that was because they were asking questions in another room in Discord.
That's funny. Oh, I know who it is. Funny. Yeah, so we both know who it is. so now there's 3.5 million Cub in total locked. I forgot what point I was on before I went on a tangent.
Well, you were talking about, and it's good because I kind of want to revisit it, because I was asking about this and I get it, but I'm still a little confused in terms of maybe the other side of it. So, you know, we'll use your example, whatever, like you lock 100 Cub and let's just say you lock it for 52 weeks, right? And then when you look at the UI, it shows you Cub locked, it's got 100 there. And then it shows recent Cub profit. And let's just say it's like, whatever, 1.5 Cub, it shows that. Where I think people might get lost and where I kind of was confused at first is like, all right, so that recent Cub profit, what is going on with that Cub? Is that liquid? Is that automatically auto staked? So you said basically it's auto staked. So like the Cub you're earning from the Cub you have locked, so the Cub you're earning off that 100 Cub isn't liquid, like that's compounding. So I guess the tail end of that is that's maybe confusing because it's like, all right, I'm looking at my Cub locked and I'm looking at my profit. So it's like my Cub locked is technically what says Cub locked plus my recent Cub profit. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What you're earning on is the total of those two numbers.
So now let's take it another step further. So now you have, like, for instance, on the UI, you have options of add Cub and extend, right? So if I hit add Cub, now if I have any other liquid Cub out there that I want to stake, basically what it would be doing is in this instance of if you were someone that did the max duration, 52 weeks, you essentially have the option of adding to your Cub locked by either renewing and kicking off essentially what is 52 weeks from that moment, or just adding and then it pushes into your existing 52-week time frame. Let's say it's at this point, you know, like hypothetically 51 weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah. So yeah, when you add anything to it, it just adds to your lock, the same lock period that you were in.
Gotcha. So you can even stick with your current duration if it's, you know, eroded some, or you can actually renew and kick off a fresh 52 weeks.
Right.
And now that would kick off a fresh 52 weeks for not just the new cub that you're adding, but for the existing cub you have locked up as well.
Right.
All right. Just want to make sure. Sweet. So now the only other button we have is the extend button. So the extend button does what? Is this where if, let's say, in 20 weeks from now?
I don't know if I don't know if I said this the right way.
Okay. And this is why I'm asking this question.
Yeah. So the add, so extending extends the, and this is where things get a little complicated. You kind of have to play around with it a little bit. But extending will actually extend the duration of your lock. If you just add cub, you'll know, like, so if you hit add cub, you'll notice that there's a little button that says renew and extend your lock to keep similar benefits. So you can add cub without extending your lock if you don't check that box. So yeah, by adding, I didn't know if I said that in a clear way, but
I'm sorry. I was just like, and that's exactly the point I was trying to make. And I might have made it maybe confusing because I was actually looking at the, you know, the UI while we were talking about it. But yeah, no, that's exactly what you said.
Okay.
You have the option to, you have the option to basically add, or you have the option to, in fact, I don't even know if it needs to say, I guess renew and extend. Yeah, that makes sense for that verbiage. So you can just straight up add to your existing duration, or you can basically renew, therefore extending. So if you're, you know, if you want to add, let's say, another 100 cub and you want to lock that up for 52 weeks, you could hit renew, the check mark, the renew and extend your lock. And then you'll keep the same, you know, similar benefits. And now instead of 100, you'll have 200 cub locked up for 52 weeks from that point.
Right.
So,
So let's say that you add 100 cub right now. And then a month from now, so 4 weeks from now, you want to add another 100 cub. So you just, your lock and your, the unlocks in that on the far right, that's updated in real time. So it shows you the exact date when yours will unlock. So let's say that 4 weeks go by. So now your locked vault is only locked for 48 more weeks because you're already 4 weeks into it. Right. So if you add 100 more cub to the original 100 cub, you can just add cub to that 40 and you'll still have that 48 week period until you can unlock all of it. But the thing is your yield boost will come down. So your yield boost basically is reduced because you're essentially adding cub at that point for a lesser yield boost than 52 weeks. So the reason why the UI says renew and extend to keep similar benefits is that if you want to add cub and have the 52 week yield boost on the new cub, then you have to extend the lock for 52 weeks.
So that leaves us with the last button, which is a button that does say extend. So my assumption, and again, I'm just essentially guessing as I go along here. My assumption is that with this, I'm able to just extend my existing. So like, let's say 52 weeks from now is, you know, no, we're creeping up on Thanksgiving, November, 2023. And it's like, oh, sweet. You know, my cub's going to all unlock in a few days. This gives me the option to basically relock that cub for whatever duration I want. Gotcha.
Cause and that makes sense.
Cause like right now I can't do anything cause it hasn't even been 1 week. So I can't even extend for 1 week. If I wanted to, though, in theory, come this time next week, I could literally extend it an additional week.
Right. So let's say, so basically there's something called the afterburn. And what that means is that let's say you've just staked for 52 weeks and then next year, November, 2023, you're like, you're not at your computer. You're on vacation for a week or something. Right. And let's say a whole week goes by and your lock has now expired. Your original 52 week lock has expired. the exact time when it expires, it starts to kick into something called afterburn, which basically just means that you haven't extended your lock, but your cub is still in the locked vault. So any earnings that it's getting will actually just be burned. So all, so like, let's say you have 100 cub in there. If you're earning one cub per day and your lease has expired, or not your lease, but your lock has expired, you're now in afterburn, where that one cup per day, instead of getting paid to you, is actually just getting paid to the null address, and it's getting burned. So you need to extend your lock, or you need to remove the cub and put it in flexible or something if you want to keep earning. So the extend button, basically the use case for the extend button is, hey, I know my lock is going to expire in the next 2 weeks, but I'm not planning on taking it out of locked. So I'm going to extend it now ahead of time and extend it for 12 weeks so that I don't have to worry about it for another 12 weeks.
Yeah. Basically lets you push forward, which, see, and again, this is why you read the effing docs, because by going max 52 weeks, you can get the highest yield. But if I personally could do it over again, I would have done a larger amount than I did at 52 weeks, but maybe in like a quarterly fashion, like giving up some yield just so like every quarter I have the option of, all right, am I going to lock this thing back up, or am I going to, you know, maybe move some around?
Yeah.
So this is why basically I'm deep diving with all the questions, because a lot of people, you know, were like me, kind of stumbling into it yesterday. So it's good that the AMA was today. I think it's going to give people a lot of clarity. So hopefully people will go back and listen to the replay if they are not here now. And I could put this into a recap post, but that is a lot of work that I have to now do on the fly.
Yeah, it is a little confusing. It does take a little bit of time. So just take your time, maybe throw a small amount of cub in and play around with the lock, and you know, do it for 1 week, and you can always extend it.
And why, that's the only thing is
you can't reduce it. So
exactly. And that's what people need to know, in terms of like, you're making a commitment. So when you make the commitment, like, that's it. There's no divorce button.
Right.
So once you put that ring on that cub paw, you're locked in.
Once you put the diamond ring on that paw.
Exactly. Once you turn that paw into a diamond paw, I feel like there could be totally a good
meme. That could be a meme. Yeah.
This would definitely be a good meme.
Yeah. The locked kingdom.
Turn that paw into a diamond paw.
On the paw. Yep.
And you see like picture with diamond going on the
yeah
paw.
I love it.
Oh, it's too funny. Cool. Yeah, so in the end, you know, in terms of the functionality we just covered, you know, just know that, you know, it's your flexibility is based on like one option, so to speak. Like, you can't do, you know, put 100 cub and lock that for 52 weeks and then take another 100 cub and lock that only for like 4 weeks. Like, you can't, like, it's one or the other. So choose your timing wisely. And if you want to have more like more flexibility, then do shorter lockings. Then you could always just extend or relock, but you'll earn a slightly, you know, smaller yield,
right,
as opposed to, you know, the max yield. Yep. Which we're probably going to see change over the course of the next week or so. Did you want to talk about the multiplier or leave that for when that's being fixed?
One thing before that is we just added. So after the update went live, after we like pushed the vault live, we were missing one update that we were still working on, which is now also live. We pushed it last night. And that shows total locked and average locked duration on the left-hand side. So I just wanted to explain that. So total locked shows the total amount of cub that's actually locked for some duration of time. So it doesn't include the flexible staking. So if you look at the contract address, which anyone can do, you'll actually see the total amount of actual cub in the whole kingdom, which includes both flex and fixed. That is, I just pulled it up, is 5 million cub, almost on the dot. So there's 5 million cub in the kingdom, right? And this is just for anyone who wants to like look into how much Cub is actually staked. And that total 5 million is where you get the, it says 161,700 in dollar value TVL in the whole kingdom. So that, that 5 million Cub, it equals $161,000. So that's how you get those total numbers. But then you see total locked is only 3.5 million. So that means that there's 1.5 million in flex and 3.5 million in locked. So I just wanted to explain that. And then below that, you see average lock duration, which is the average lock duration of all the locked positions. And it's actually kind of cool how that calculation works. It's basically taking that full 3.5 million Cub and it's taking the actual average of when that will be unlocked. So, so for example, like if someone locks 100,000 Cub for 52 weeks, but someone else locks 1 million Cub for 2 weeks, then the average will actually skew a lot more towards 2 weeks than 52 weeks, if that makes sense. It's actually a weighted average. So that's kind of a cool thing. So it's basically telling you that of that 3.5 million Cub, the vast majority of it is locked for 39 weeks. And it's just, it's that weighted average. It's kind of a cool metric. And you can kind of use it that way. In my opinion, you can look at it and say, okay, well, 3.5 million Cub is locked. And on average, you know, it's not going to see the market for 39 weeks. So, and that will obviously always keep getting extended as people extend their locks. So now into the other update. So we were talking pre-show about how the flexible versus the locked was actually intended to work. And it's currently not working the way, you know, it was intended, which is the flexible is offering half as much APY as the locked for 52 weeks. So that means that the max yield boost you can get right now is 2x. And that's if you lock it for 52 weeks. But the intended yield boost was supposed to be 20x. So you're supposed to lock for 52 weeks and get 20 times the multiplier of people who are flex staked. So like right now, how that would work is like if the flexible APY was 5%, then the 52 week staking APY would be 50%, which is how it was supposed to work. I'm already talking to the devs about how we could fix that. It should be pretty easy for us to just adjust the yield boost, the max yield boost. So we are we're planning to do that shortly. Hopefully within the next 1 or 2 days, if everything goes our way. So that'll basically mean if you've locked,
go up.
Right, if you've locked when for 52 weeks, your yield should 10x. Essentially.
That is definitely a good incentive, obviously, for people to lock longer. Because I mean, right now there is a higher APY, but it's not
not a lot higher.
Well, it's still a good chunk, but it's not like, I mean, that 20x, I mean, it's a huge difference.
Right. Which is how it should be. I mean, you should be deeply incentivized to lock because having instant liquidity to sell or pool or do whatever you want is a huge benefit. So we need to offset that benefit with having a high APY for giving up that benefit by locking. So yes. If you look at PancakeSwap, which is actually what this contract is inspired by, they have a 22x multiplier, which means like right now, I think the APY is something like, actually, I just pull it up. Let's see. It was something like 50% APY if you staked for 52 weeks. So their flex APY right now is 2.76%. And their max locked APY is 59% for 52 weeks. So that nice. That is more of the spectrum that we're trying to get at. But yeah, we missed the yield boost from the beginning. But once we fix the yield boost, it will apply to people who are already locked. So it's perfect. Not going to affect. The only people it'll technically affect are the people in flexible staking. But if they want to then participate in lock, they can easily just lock it. So if you're already locked, there's nothing you need to do. Your yield will just go up.
That works for me.
Yeah. So
awesome. So, outside of the big Cub Kingdom update, what else is new in the world of Leo Finance over the past week?
Yeah, so we're doing a lot on the new UI front. That's obviously kind of like the big focus. It's coming along really well. Here I can show a little more alpha for anybody in Discord. So we've done a couple things, adding dark mode, and then one big feature that probably doesn't look like much on the front end, but is actually kind of a big deal in terms of actual like back end work is integrating the tags. So you can see in the screenshot I just shared, it shows you latest threads with the hashtag GM friends tag. So we've integrated tags now, which was a big deal. And then we also worked a little bit on the markdown formatting of the UI. And then we added post preview. So you can kind of see in that bottom right of that little screenshot, you can kind of see a little bit of a post preview. So yeah, things are going well. Things are going really well. And the new UI will really enhance a lot of things about the user experience. So a lot of what we're working on is better feeds for threads. Because right now, basically, you're kind of locked into just looking at one thread feed. I mean, you can sort by topics and recent and trending, but it really changes everything when you can actually get like a good sorting mechanism, like curated sorting. So that's kind of what we're working on next. And then we're also working on, as of this morning, we're trying to integrate ThreeSpeak to do short form videos. And that should get uploaded to the current UI, and then we'll port it over to the new UI. But you'll be able to basically, and this is something that Neil is going to love, you'll basically be able to go to Threads and hit record and record up to 60 seconds of a video clip and then automatically post it onto Threads and ThreeSpeak at the same time. So yeah,
That's cool.
I'm excited for what that user experience is going to look like.
Hell, that might incentivize me to actually start doing that more. And I can't remember the last time I've been on 3Speed, but just in terms of doing more video, especially just short video clips, like
I
even
mean,
like charting clips.
yeah. I think it'll really change the user experience a lot. It'll add a lot of depth to what we can do.
All right, hold on. So, Leo Finance UI. So basically, the goal is to have that connection between Leo Finance and ThreeSpeak. And basically what? So if I do a short clip video on ThreeSpeak, I can have that'll be able to push straight to Leo Finance. Is that what you were saying, or
So you'll do it, you'll go straight to the Threads UI and you'll hit something
gotcha?
like record, and then you'll be able to record a 60-second video and it'll get posted to ThreeSpeak and Leo Threads.
Gotcha. So as of right now, is the three speak part the addition, or just even doing the video thing is what's being added?
Sorry, what
Or
was that?
the recording the 60-second video, is that something I can already do,
Not
or no?
on Leo Threads. I think ThreeSpeak
Gotcha.
has some sort of, I think if you download the ThreeSpeak desktop app, you can do that on ThreeSpeak. It's like a new thing that they just added. And this is something that I've wanted to do on Threads, which is short form videos. So we're going to basically create like our own little direct channel to their back end. And then it'll let you do videos on Threads. So that's not live yet. We just started working on it this morning.
Gotcha.
But hopefully
Cool.
in this universe.
The good old Sooniverse. Awesome. We got some stuff in chat. 100 cub is a bad example to use. Yes, it is. I was going to use 100,000 cub as an example, but I was just keeping it simple for example purposes. And apparently, Locked Kingdom is not behaving on Brave and on Trust Wallet. I would know nothing about Brave those things.
I haven't had any.
Oh, problems. Do you? But you use, I'm assuming you use MetaMask, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I use Chrome still and MetaMask. And I'm not having any problems with the Cub Kingdom. Some of the other kingdoms are being a little finicky, though. What do we got? Oh, I like feed this. I like feedback. It's on a mobile app, not yet finished, but it kind of works. It's cool, but looks like straight copy of Twitter, but maybe that's a good thing. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what Project Blank was always intended to be, which is, you know, when people come to it, they're like, oh, this is like Twitter, but on a blockchain. It should be instant right when they see it. It's an instant realization.
Which some of the chatter I'm seeing and like just some of the text convos I'm in with like other investors that are, you know, follow Elon and his businesses, they were basically saying how it's looking like Elon's trying to not cryptify Twitter, but definitely create an environment where people can earn for participation, which if that's the case, he'll probably have to cryptofy it.
Right.
So if that's the case, I mean, I look at that as a good thing because that's going to bring that environment to more commonplace, but that's going to take some time and that'll be good for Leo Finance because it'll already be established in terms of doing all those things already. And at the end of the day, it's like Leo Finance isn't essentially trying to be a Twitter killer because A, it technically couldn't because Leo Finance is in a niche as opposed to Twitter that is all the things. And nor does it need to be. But if that by chance happened, obviously that would be sick. But Leo Finance can still be a robust community without competing with Twitter.
Right. Yeah, I think the vision that Elon has for Twitter is actually a really good one. And I think what we're doing is kind of copying what he's talking about in some ways. In other ways, he's kind of copying us in terms of Hive in general, where, you know, you go to something like Leo Finance and, you know, we already have a wallet integration. We already pay creators in crypto. You know, we're already posting things on an immutable blockchain. A lot of the things that he's talking about adding to Twitter, we already have. We already have direct payments to people. Like he's talking about basically creating a WhatsApp. He's talking about basically migrating Twitter into WhatsApp. Because WhatsApp in China, they basically do everything on it. You know, you pay people in on it. You do really everything. Yeah, I mean, you do everything on WhatsApp. That's basically what he said. And we're basically, in my opinion, we're already well ahead of that curve in terms of you already can pay people, you can earn for being a crypto creator. And, you know, now we have long form content and short form content. He's talking about adding long form content. He's talking about adding video content or like better video content, like long form to compete with YouTube. So he's talking about creating basically the everything app. And in my opinion, we already have a lot of those core pillars of the everything app. So I think the vision for Leo Finance has changed a little bit. And instead of spinning off and doing Project Blank, we're actually just merging everything that we've done. We're merging everything that we've done into one unified UI that can do it all. So you can do short form, you can do long form, you can pay people, you can have a wallet, you can earn for your content, you can do short form video, you can do long form video. I think Marco, you're right. I think it's called WeChat. I mixed it up with WhatsApp. So WeChat, I think, is the China app that
lets you do a lot of things. Oh my God, WeChat's an actual thing. So like I use WhatsApp, obviously, but like I remember getting like spam things for like, you know, WeChat invites or whatever. And I literally thought it was like complete spam. That's funny.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. 80% sure. But yeah, that's the vision of Leo Finance now, is creating that everything app experience.
Coolness. Let's see if we got anything going on over YouTube. What do we got? Splinter News. Where merch shop? Can I pay with Cub? I want Leo Finance hoodie, please. I don't know if you can pay with Cub. I know that you can get Leo Finance t-shirts, but I don't know about in fact, I don't even remember. See if I can log into this thing. I had created some, I sent in some Leo Finance graphic for some t-shirts on one site.
Love it.
So I could basically buy them for myself, but in theory, anyone can buy them. But I don't know if I made hoodie an option. I got to fucking remember what my login is to this site, but in theory, anyone can buy, but it's, you have to pay with USD.
Yes. Yeah. I got this crew neck. It actually was a gift from someone last Christmas.
Nice.
Oh yeah. But yeah, I need some more Leo merch. I gotta start keeping a big box of Leo merch that I can just hand out to people I know.
100%. I mean, that's what, you know, Walter does. In fact, I was over in Tampa visiting him, and I came back with a hoodie, a Alchemist Nation hoodie with one of the slogans on it. I gotta rock. I gotta get a camera where you can see more of me. Because when I rock the brand, you can't even see. I mean, I'm not wearing a Leo Finance today, but I got a gray and a black Leo Finance tee, chilling. I wear them time to time. I think I rocked at one point at the 100 Millionaire Summit. I was rocking. I mixed in the Leo Finance shirt with all the Alchemist Nation stuff. But anywho, so what do we got? Greater than the state. I am not sure what's he's saying on this one. I was able to pay an unstake, pay for an NE contract, but can't put it in. I'm not sure. When in doubt, submit a ticket. Luckily, submitting tickets is free. Poor people problems, technically, but The Notorious B.I.G. would not agree, because, as he said, more money, more problems. Alrighty then. Yeah, I don't think we're pretty quiet on the question front this week. All is quiet with crypto. Speaking of, shall we talk? If all things Leo Finance universe are covered, if not, feel free to jump in. But if not, we can jump into some general crypto market talk.
Yeah, have you seen what happened with Curve?
Yeah, because I saw Gerber talking about it. Wish I would have saw it sooner. Seemed like an opportunity to buy Curve. Also, did you see the rumors about Gemini's lending arm?
Yeah.
Potential bankruptcy. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, let's let's jump into that. So yeah, Gemini. So there's basically like this, they own three different major things, right? It's Gemini, or it's not Gemini. Gemini is the Winklevoss twins. What's the other one? Genesis. It's Genesis, not Gemini.
Oh, yes. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a Freudian slip. Big difference. Right.
Genesis, and then, and Genesis is like the lending arm of their ultimate holding company. So it's basically Genesis and then GBTC and all this other stuff. So I actually put out a thread earlier today. Let me just pull it up. Where is it? Yeah, so here it is. So the whole Grayscale blow up. So they've obviously got Genesis lending and all this other stuff. But I read this interesting thread where someone was talking about how the CEO of it, Barry, could basically unravel GBTC instead of actually just selling off the company. Because a lot of people are saying the company's basically for sale for $1 billion because they're trying to raise $1 billion. And if someone came in and said, I'll just buy you out for $1 billion, they probably would do it. So there's an alternative narrative, which is that potentially they could unravel GBTC and just take all the capital they raised from doing that and use that to basically save the other parts of their company. So I don't know. I mean, I think losing GBTC might be a little bearish for crypto, but I don't know that it's that bearish. Right now, it's also trading at a 52% premium, which is the biggest premium it's ever traded at. Discount. Biggest discount it's ever traded at.
Wow, man. That sounds like a potential gamble opportunity.
Right. Right.
GBTC never made sense to me. I mean, it's for basically legacy finance, old school investors. I mean, there's a guy I play ball with that's in his 60s and like he owns a chunk of that. And I'm just like, why don't you just buy actual Bitcoin?
Right. Well, that's the problem, right? Like it doesn't really track the market because you can't arbitrage it. So it doesn't really, it's not really Bitcoin because there's no arbitrage play on GBTC. That's why there's such a big discount on it.
Yep.
And if GBTC goes under, how are you getting your money out is the question.
This just goes back to not your keys, not your coins.
Right. Sooner people learn that the better, but sometimes people gotta learn it the hard way.
I'm just getting like tired of it too, with like just normies that know nothing about crypto and they're like hating on it. And I'm just like laughing. I was like, sweet. And like everything they say, I'm like, and that would be a thing if the person has their Bitcoin on their own wallet. It's like, there's nothing wrong with Bitcoin. Bitcoin's fine. Nothing happened to Bitcoin. Yeah, the price is getting beat up because of the sell-offs, because of the over-leveraging of centralized exchanges and essentially basically the straight Ponzi nature of what was FTX in the end. But which FTX is still baffling to me. Like, it was almost like too good to fuck up, and somehow he still did it.
Right.
Like when does...
I mean, he could have easily, even if it had started as a Ponzi scheme, they had so much popularity, so much usage that he could have turned it into a profitable business overnight. And he still lost.
Yep.
Which just goes to show you that it's just a bad actor is only going to do bad things. You can't rely on a bad actor to become a good actor.
100%. So do you want to touch on the what happened with Curve over like
so basically people saw on chain that some guy took let me get my exact numbers up.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was huge.
Yeah. So a curve shorter borrowed 20 million curve from Aave, which is a DeFi protocol, if you don't know. And they transferred 10 million of that to OKX, which is an exchange. And then they started dumping curve. And they said that in total, he borrowed about 37 million curve over the past 7 days. And the price of curve basically started steadily dropping from at the time 62 cents to about 46 cents. So 26% drop. So he's dumping all the curve. And I think it's over now, but I think at this time he was dumping all the curve, trying to drop the price. He may still be doing it. I'm not really entirely sure. But then a lot of other people came out and said that the owner or founder of Curve has some big position, and his liquidation price is like 24 cents. So it looks like this is an attack to try to get Curve below 24 cents to basically liquidate the founder and drop Curve to nothing or close to nothing.
Which is interesting because, like, the big player that's doing this, I mean, that's a huge risk. And I'm sure there's obviously a profit opportunity somewhere, but I'm really missing on what it is. Unless they're short a shit ton somewhere else.
Right. So,
on like futures.
Yeah. Then, so you've got that. And then you've got other theories that people are coming up with that it's actually an attack on Aave. Because if Aave were to basically, if they basically force a huge liquidation event on Curve, it would leave Aave with a lot of bad debt on the Aave Curve lending vaults. So some people are saying it's possible that he's actually doing this, but his real position is one that we don't see. And it's a short on Aave because the Aave has their own token. So it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's like, you know, whale wars are back. And they're kind of in a big way where everyone's on the lookout for the next blow up. So I feel like it's kind of become like blow up watch season where, you know, everyone is scared of these potential blow ups. So people are actually trying to create them, because they know that there's a lot of fear in the market. And if you can get a hold of that fear, you could tank something like Curve pretty easily.
Well, and that'll impact, you know, all of crypto too. So anytime these events happen now, you get panic selling. So basically everything's going to sell off. You know, actually the first thing that popped in my head was more so, I guess, conspiracy like in that, you know, if Aave got blown up, this would be a decentralized, you know, entity essentially, which that would be a really bad look for crypto. Like everything else has been centralized, blah, 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 bad player. Like, this would be an attack on, you know, trying to prove like decentralization doesn't work or whatever. So right. I don't know.
Well, maybe, you know, and that's the ironic thing.
Yeah.
That's the ironic thing is that these decentralized protocols have, you know, and the good ones, not the, you know, some plenty of shady DeFi protocols have already been hacked, blown up, whatever. But these big protocols, the ones that have been big players this whole time that have not gone away, I'm talking like MakerDAO, Aave, Curve, players like that, their protocols are all on chain. So anyone can see if there is a way to leverage the protocol to destroy it and take a bunch of money, anything like that. It's all transparently on chain for anybody to read. So, you know, the ironic thing is people may be coming after these protocols and trying to take them down. But in reality, like if it proves that you can't take down a DeFi protocol like this, it just further proves the point of how much we need DeFi and how important it is, and how it's a staple in the industry. And obviously that's my opinion, is that DeFi is not going anywhere. And these protocols are just getting more and more hardened through all of this, all of these different trials and you know, things that are failing in terms of centralized companies. It's all of this, and you can actually see this happening in DeFi, where a lot of capital and activity has been moving away from centralized exchanges and onto DeFi protocols. I think there were some record numbers recently posted about trading volumes on DeFi protocols ever since the FTX blow up. And that's really what you want to see. I mean, you want to see, you know, you need these centralized companies like Coinbase to be the fiat on-ramp and off-ramp. But once you've on-ramped into crypto, you should not be interacting with a centralized exchange until you off-ramp back to fiat. And that's my opinion. I think when you're within crypto, you should be using decentralized exchanges for pretty much everything.
Yep. Onboarding and offboarding. It's the only time I use centralized exchanges. Same. But that's at least a good question, because I had, a normie buddy text me and he's just like, is there a way for me to buy Bitcoin without using a centralized exchange and like also not having any idea about how to program? Like, obviously he doesn't even know how to program to, but I mean, I haven't looked in a long time, but there are peer-to-peer exchanges out there. So in theory, you're not using centralized exchange. I mean, you're using a quote unquote organizer. And then there's always, over the counter, if you want to do it, someone that's got some coin they want to sell and like and trust them. But yeah, that's really it. So, I mean, centralized exchanges do still serve a purpose in terms of ease of use in regards to onboarding.
Absolutely.
Onboarding people/fiat dollars into crypto.
Speaking of crypto, what do you think of crypto prices? So Bitcoin dropped to about 15,500 the last couple of days. Now, as of today, we're back up above 16K barely. Stock market's up 1%. NASDAQ is up 0.25%. Curve is up 24%, back to 62 cents. Looks like that attack was a complete failure. Yeah, what do you think of Bitcoin? What do you think of crypto here?
I mean, I'm kind of disappointed we're actually up today. It looked like, we put a new low in yesterday. Same thing. I have an order on Cosmos. I think it came like 25, 30 cents short of where my order was sitting. I was like, son bitch, so close. I'm trying to actually look at the curve price also now. Oh yeah, look at that crazy candle we got going on right now. Whipping around. Low of 40, high of 74, currently at 61 cents. There was some money to be made. Oh wow.
Yeah, so it looks like Gerber made some good money on it. 17.
So what is this? Yeah, the 5 in the morning was when it turned around. Interesting. Yeah. I was up at like 2, but it was still at like 45 cents. But yeah, had I bought, I would have woke up to some green and then some really good green. I didn't even think about that. I was just too tired. Yeah, I know he did a long on the futures, so probably made some decent money.
Yeah, yeah, as far as Bitcoin, nice to be able to trade crypto futures when you're not.
Yeah, all willy-nilly on Binance, all the options with the 20x or more leverage.
Yep. Sucks to be a protected investor.
Yes.
But still can lose money in FTX.
Exactly.
Which is kind of a fun discussion too. Like, and I saw another podcast, they were talking about this, how the regulators claim that their entire mission is to protect the individual investor, and they do so by limiting access to various things, like early stage seed investing or, using certain exchanges, like for example, Binance, if you're in the US or many other countries, you can't even touch Binance, Binance.com. And all of this stuff is a big claim on protecting investors. Meanwhile, the highest profile U.S. exchange that was backed by a lot of regulators had a lot of regulator, a lot of regulators had their hands in that pot. They were getting plenty of donations from FTX and SBF personally. And a lot of U.S. Meanwhile, a lot of U.S. customers lost millions and millions and millions and obviously billions of dollars on the exchange. It's really incredible that they can sit on one ledge and say, hey, we're protecting the individual investor by preventing them from being stupid, but then we'll back another project exchange that turns out to be the Enron of crypto.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Morton's saying FTX wasn't a U.S. company. They had FTX U.S. and they had all their other entities that were you know, U.S. based. They filed bankruptcy in the U.S. So yeah, I mean, they may have been based out of the Bahamas, but they had their roots deep in the U.S.
Oh, big portion of their business was U.S.
Yep.
I mean, case in point, dude basically had Tom Brady as a sponsor. You don't do that unless you have a big presence in the U.S. because that's his biggest influence.
Right. Nobody cares about football outside of the U.S.
But yeah, interesting times. I don't know. Maybe the sell-off from that's done. Maybe it's not. I mean, you look at the Bitcoin chart. It looks like, you know, a nice bear flag pattern. You know, started to push lower last night. Now it's up a little today, but so is the stock market. So, but, you know, nothing looks bullish at all about the chart. So from a technical charting standpoint, you know, it looks weak. And
yeah, I think a lot of people are afraid of the next blow up, who it's going to be, if there's going to be one. And
I think we're
that just kind of has everyone running scared.
Yeah, I think we're going lower. We'll see.
You think we're going lower?
I mean, we're just grinding lower. That's what it seems like. But if not, then whatever. But honestly, it just sucks having money not being put to work, and that I have orders, you know, lower. You know, I have orders 2,500 points from here, pretty much, that I would love to see filled.
Yeah.
And that's me playing it somewhat conservative in that, you know, I don't want to load up a big chunk here and then see us drop into the 13s, which is an area I've been targeting, as mentioned on many other calls, and not, you know, be able to get aggressive there. So I'm almost like, you know, risking missing out here if this is the bottom, trying to get that, you know, extra bit. But I don't know. I might start nibbling here. I mean, like, I had bought at 16.5 when it first, you know, sold off. So it's not like I haven't bought, but I haven't been dollar cost averaging. I know you've been doing a lot more of that. But yeah, I just look at this as, you know, the build and stack season, build, stack, stake, and then, you know, look up 2.5 years from now. 100%. Like, anything I'm buying, I'm holding. Like, I have zero, like, if it happens, great, but I have zero expectations of seeing a bull market in crypto before the next halving.
Yeah, I could really foresee Bitcoin dropping down to like 10,000. I don't think it's super likely. And I'm, you know, I've been dollar cost averaging ever since we dipped below 20K. So really anything under 20K, I'm a buyer. Since we dipped below 18K, I've been buying even more heavily. So I've kind of been on a ladder DCA strategy where, you know, I've the more that Bitcoin goes down, the heavier my DCA gets. But with that being said, I'm not being a degen and throwing all my dry powder at Bitcoin all at once. I'm still planning it out for the long term. I'm hopeful that we won't drop below 15K, but at the same time, I won't be that surprised if we do. And if we do, I'm keeping plenty of dry powder to increase my DCA if and when that happens. And then obviously I'm my time horizon is out 2 years. So, I'm basically buying this Bitcoin without expecting to sell it for the next at least 2 years. And we do have the Bitcoin halving. So we're already back talking about the Bitcoin halving, but let's see how many days we're out. Last time I checked, I think it was like a year and a half or something like that.
Yeah, it's roughly a year and a half, maybe a little less. It'll be interesting too when that comes up and the state of the economy, because, you know, a year from now the economy might be dog shit, and if that's the case, like, how is that going to impact Bitcoin? But again, that might be the scenario I've been talking about for years, where, you know, we need, I think, a recession and a beat up stock market and all that stuff, potentially, to see a decoupling of crypto, or even Bitcoin itself, from the stock market. You know, where people look at Bitcoin more as that, like, alternative investment and quote unquote safe haven, but I don't know, it's probably too volatile to ever be that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the volatility of crypto has been getting better. I know that kind of ironic to say it now because a lot has happened last couple months in crypto, but you know, the industry has changed a lot since the last bear market, which was 2018. So it's I do think the industry is a lot more mature, and as these blowups happen, these blowups are kind of the key indicators of a maturing industry. So you look at like internet companies in 2000, and the blowups were a big piece of actually maturing the whole industry, creating better practices for venture investing and things like that. And right now, in crypto, you're seeing a lot of blowups and people realizing that there need to be better practices. You're also seeing it outside of crypto in the tech market and with seed stage investors and venture capitalists losing, shit tons of money on new IPOs and, that whole SPAC movement. You are seeing, it's not just crypto. Like a lot of, I think I saw something that like DoorDash was down like over 80%. A lot of different tech companies are getting hit just as hard as crypto is. So, look at crypto and they're like, oh, this is the Wild West shithole. But then meanwhile, there's plenty of stocks on the NASDAQ that are getting wrecked.
Even big name players. Facebook has gotten destroyed.
Yeah.
Amazon's down a big chunk. Like,
in fact,
Amazon was the first company in history to lose $1 trillion in value.
Yeah, I remember not that long ago when Apple was the first company in history to hit $1 trillion in value.
Right. That goes to show you how much liquidity and inflation has been pumped into the system the last 20 years. It's insane.
Yeah, it is. It's really crazy. Tesla, I saw a headline. Tesla hit a 2-year low, I think, yesterday. So Tesla's off its highs of $400. And now it's at 169. So, and Tesla is actually very impressive earnings wise. Like I watched their last earnings call and I was like, damn, it's really solid, earnings.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Tesla's a stock that I actually want to start buying now that it's this low. That was one of the things that I planned on doing at the beginning of the month. Had my condo sale closed, but obviously that's delayed, so that sucks. But, just because I have some Tesla in my IRA, so just stack more in there. So, I'd rather buy it obviously here. After it's been down a lot, it's already bounced a little bit. So, I don't know. I guess I'm hoping there's no Santa Claus rally in the market this year because it's going to probably be mid to late December it's going to be late December before I'm in a position to pick up any stocks. It kind of sucks. But I am definitely going to finish this recap post after we get off because basically I got to plug in Cub Kingdom info that we talked about. That's a little more
detailed. Yeah, we covered a lot on that front.
Yeah, so, but people are definitely better off listening to the replay. But anywho, let's double check. We got anything else? Yes, global recession. I agree. How's that? What do we got over in nothing new in YouTube?
Every company and person needs to be prepared for at least 2 years of shit, basically. Two years of a crypto winter.
Yeah. If you don't have like a runway for a couple of years, you're gonna be scrambling for capital. And that's going to be harder to get. And that's what you're seeing with a lot of these, traditional companies, quote unquote, traditional tech companies, with stocks, is that the ability to just basically snap your fingers and raise money is gone. Like right now, liquidity is totally driven up from the Fed raising rates, easing off on quantitative easing. So it used to be, it didn't matter. Like, there was just so much money that needed to be thrown at stuff that didn't matter if you were bleeding money. As long as you had something that potentially could grab market share or get a big user base, you could call up venture capital and just get money so easy. So the party always ends at some point. So everyone was drunk, drinking the vodka, and the vodka finally ran dry. So
now we
find out who's got tolerance and who doesn't. But
absolutely.
Either way, stack and stake. That's my motto stack for the next 6 months.
Stack and stake. Cool. Wait for Cub to hit 20 cents from
exactly. That's what I'm waiting for. Revenue. Keep stacking, keep adding to the pools. It's pretty much what I've been doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Sweet.
Cool. All right. Next week is the 29th. It's Tuesday. Nice. So I will be around. So we will see you all then.
All right. We'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving to anybody who's celebrating the Turkey Day.
To the US folk, happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. And I'm grateful for all the Cubs.
Grateful for all the Cubs. All right. Catch you next week.
Indeed. See you guys on the next one.
See ya.
Later.